Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast, the sad Leafs are out again in seven edition. It's a cut and paste edition of the podcast. We're doing this via Zoom because the Toronto Marathon would make Bob's trip west east even that much more difficult. Hi, Bob.
It would be harder for me to get to you than it would be for the Leafs to get to the second round, which apparently is quite hard.
It really is. The joke I've been making is that I would have an easier time getting entry into a swanky King Street nightclub with a tight sweater that says, "Where's the beef?" than the Maple Leafs trying to gain entry while they're on the power play. I mean, just a disaster.
This pod has been postponed a couple times because we had planned to do a post-game five season wrap-up, then a post-game six season wrap-up. It made it to seven, so we just kept kicking it down the hall. Because we thought, you know, when we do this, we're either going to celebrate something awesome or talk about something sad.
Where were you for last night? Where were you when Pasternak beat Marner and Morgan Riley and Nylander was standing watching it? Where were you?
I was sitting watching it at home and apparently moving about as fast as Morgan Riley was. That was a sad play. You know, you wish that, because they fought really hard all game long, you really wish that it had come down to just a fluky bounce as opposed to a gaffe. They didn't really deserve a gaffe in that game because they had tried really hard and they played a good team on the road against an amazing goalie playing out of his mind. So playoff hockey, it's weird. It's a piece of frozen rubber on a sheet of ice. Bounces go weird ways. You wish it would have been a gaffe. I mean, you wish it would have been a fluke as opposed to a gaffe.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because you can go back and go, oh, Marner, you know, you got outraced by Pasternak. What were you doing? Morgan Riley, why were you standing where you were? And Nylander, you just watched it all. It was a bad look by him. The crazy thing is I was actually at a concert last night. I went to see Postal Service and Death Cab for Cutie, bought the tickets months and months ago. When the concert ended, we went to a bar to watch the end of the third period and overtime. And it's just the finality of it. You're sitting there and you're excited and you're scared. And then when it scores, it ends like that. It's like, wait, that's it? That's it? It's over? They're going, no, it can't be. Like, it ended with this pathetic whimper. And being in a bar surrounded by Leaf fans, it was so depressing.
The initial response is always one of letdown, but the outrage meter this time is a lot lower. In past years, there's been a, what the hell are we going to do about this? And now there's a resignation that, look, you're either going to do something about this or I'm just not going to give a shit. My general sense from Leafs Twitter is, you know, we talked about how the final play. In years past, we would have dedicated 20 minutes to breaking down that play. And who's to blame? And it would have been the Zapruder film because we would have felt some great injustice had been served. But really, I don't feel like there's any of that. I think everybody thinks this team is okay at best. And they had an okay result of the season, which was they finished third in their division. And they lost in the first round to a team that was ranked higher than them. They're okay.
I was talking to Sean McAdoo from The Athletic during one of the more darker moments, like somewhere on Monday or Tuesday of last week.
Uh-huh.
And the Leafs are the Minnesota Wild.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, just take away, you know, names and all that. Just look at records and regular seasons and then always losing the first round. They're like the Minnesota Wild. And oh, I had an analogy, Bob. It's a small moment in Fight Club. When Tyler Durden, not the Brad Pitt version, the other guy whose name escapes me.
The Ed Norton version?
Ed Norton. Wow, that bad by me. He's in one of those support groups, and a woman stands up with a bandana, and she says, "Good news, I'm no longer afraid of death." That's how I feel about the Maple Leafs in terms of change. Like, if you tell me they're trading everyone, okay. Like, none of it, I have no fear of any of it anymore.
I was saying to Strombo on a live stream we were doing on his YouTube page that I was rooting against the Leafs because, not because I don't like the franchise, but because I do. And I can't stomach the idea of this having been the iteration of the squad that finally broke the drought, because then we would have to venerate them forever. And there was really so many people I dislike associated to this thing. I didn't want to have to think about this team for the rest of my life. I didn't want my grandkids to go to Mitch Marner Elementary.
It's a good point. Well, let's get right to it. Let's not dance around it.
Here's what I did, because there's so many issues. I kind of think I just broke it up into nine names for nine playoff series.
Sure. Oh, look at you. I love it.
Yeah. And we'll just talk up each name, because kind of all the themes run through them anyway. And I think the obvious place to start is Brendan Shanahan, right at the top, because for the first time, he really seems bulletproof. And the Shanahan plan, all the articles this morning on The Athletic, Chris Johnson, Jonah Siegel, everywhere you look, people aren't critiquing the players nearly so much as they're saying it's the end of the Shanahan plan. We've heard this before, but never so directly, where literally the number one name on everyone's lips is Brendan Shanahan. So I don't know. I'm not even going to ask a question. Just Shanny, where are you at?
Gone. And this is how I'll give it. If you ask Brendan Shanahan the moment he raised his third Stanley Cup, you ask that guy, what are your feelings of an executive who had 10 years, who's given all the money, all the scouts, multiple different coaches, multiple different GMs, and at the end of the day, you got one playoff series win. What would the player say should happen to that executive?
That's a fantastic rhetorical question and a really great take. You're right. Any winner would look at that guy and say, you haven't won. He, I guess, went from a winner to a survivor corporately. Mm-hmm. And those people are hardly, they just become bureaucrats in a weird sort of way. He feels almost more like middle management that just knows how to survive another cut at the big company. Those people are rarely on the side of winning. It's a great take, Matt. I really love that way of putting it. I think eventually the responsibility in all businesses fall at the top. Eventually. As we've seen happen. Yeah, as we've seen happens in real life. A lot of people fall before that.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe his firing of Dubas was really the beginning of the end, and this was just one last Hail Mary. This was like being down 8 points in the NFL, and there's 45 seconds left, and you're on your own 10. And you're like, well, if we could just go down the whole field and hit a 2-point conversion against the team that's beaten us all game long, then we're going to tire it up and go to overtime. And that's where this Leafs season kind of felt like, was just like one Hail Mary for this administration. What's really interesting, and I can't, like, I've never heard anyone, even amongst my cohort of insiders, nobody's ever really said what the real story was around Dubas, but here's, I think, what we all believe. Dubas probably wanted to get rid of one of the core four. He was planning to come back. Shanahan probably agreed with him. Then Dubas asked for more money, and someone on the board, probably Rogers, said, the hell are you talking about? You guys can't win and you want more money? And just as they had done to Masai Ujiri, they really went hard after him and probably said to Shanahan, you've got to fire this guy. We're sick of his BS. And so Shanahan had to pull a public about face, make up something that nobody ever really believed about how, you know, in business and blah, 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 blah. But he did it to appease the board and knew that his own neck was on the chopping block and went back with a plan that I bet if you gave him truth serum, he knew wouldn't work, because he'd already decided, as Dubas had, that this probably wouldn't work. Now, that's just my operating theory. Yeah. Tell me how you think that sounds.
Well, it sounds, there's a lot of logic there, because it goes back to what I think it was Edward Rogers wanting to get rid of Masai Ujiri, and, you know, business guys and women being upset because it's like, hey, you're not winning and you want more money. That's not how it works. I could see it. I could see the meddling, the ego, and all of that coming out, you know, and that was such a weird time last year. You know, does he want to be here? Does he not? And he's like, I talked about my family, and I don't know. That one's still shrouded in mystery. It never felt like we got a satisfying answer. So yes, Bob, I could absolutely see the board that, you know, that the board played a bigger part in Dubas being gone. Also, let me ask you this one other thing on Shanahan. Mm-hmm. This might seem weird, and I kind of only half believe it. If Shanahan was really overweight and slovenly, or if Shanahan was 78 years old, would he still be here? Like, part of me thinks, you know how like tall people, are more likely to be a CEO than if you're my height, because there's just, we just trust tall with a strong jaw. Like Shanahan looks like he looks like impressive winner executive guy, and yet he's never done winning
except as a player. There's an interesting tell. I remember listening to Keith Pally on the radio talking about his chief lieutenants. And with Masai Ujiri, he talked about how he's built a winner. He's built a global brand. He's done this before. The team is obviously rebuilding, but they have total faith that a guy like this can execute that. And it was very much grounded in what he had accomplished here. And then when he talked about Shanahan, he's like, this guy, he's a winner. He won as a player. He didn't really talk about what he did as an executive of the Leafs. It didn't really come up. He didn't say, we've put together a great roster. He didn't say, this is the most exciting team in hockey. He didn't say, we've had incredible success. I think we can have it again. He said, back in the day, he was a winner, which sounded like an endorsement. But to your point, the one that you made off the top, it was kind of like, you haven't done it.
No, you haven't. 10 years, one playoff series. All right.
I just want to shout out Jonah Siegel, whose article came up with a great chart that said how many playoff wins each organization has had in the last 10 years since 2014-15. And we are ranked in the bottom third below the Ottawa Senators.
Ooh, that's painful. Yeah. I've consumed almost all the content. I'll read that one later. So maybe the Minnesota Wild were giving the Leafs too much credit.
All right, next name, Sheldon Keefe.
Gone, easy. Part of that is it's the NHL, and the NHL fires coaches like crazy. They fire coaches with more frequency than they do any other league. The home record is horrible, and you know that you can look at, hey, coaching, you know, you guys have the last change. When I look at the failures of the Maple Leafs, to me, I focus on the players, then the president, but coach is gone. That to me is an easy one.
You look at the team, and he made also a very telling comment about how Leafs, when teams play the Leafs, they plan for the Leafs to beat themselves, which was kind of his way of saying, whatever happens on the ice, it's in between the ears of the players. I prep them, they don't do it. I don't know if that's true. The power play was atrocious. The penalty kill has been really bad. Those are things that you actually can coach. I understand that Guy Boucher is the guy who's in charge, but that's like saying on a football team, the special teams were no good, and that's only the special teams coach's fault.
Right.
That's not it's true, but not really. You know, you think about like who draws in. Well, who did he really have to pick from? You know, it's not like international soccer where you're playing Premier League top level and you've got an incredible roster to choose from. Which guys do I actually go with? Like he leaves out Ryan Reeves and puts in someone else. Like, yeah. Okay. What changes really? So I don't know. To me, the most damning thing about Sheldon Keefe is that this team never really seemed to find an identity. And I know that that's not satisfying. Everyone wants X's and O's, but the truth is when you're talking about top level professional athletes, the identity that your team has to evolve towards winning over time. And part of your job as a coach is not just simply to tell what players to do and how to do it, but to psychologically prepare them to do it. And he just never has. There's never how many game ones have they lost? How many first periods do they come out and float? How many times do they have a competitive game because they had 10 great minutes in which they scored 3 goals? This team has never figured out how to compete to win. And that has to fall on Keefe at least a little.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And he'll be gone. You know, the pushback would be they had Babcock, they had Keefe, they've had so many different assistant coaches, and it's been the same problem offensively year after year when the playoffs start. After the Nylander goal, they couldn't clear the puck. Morgan Rielly couldn't clear the puck. Lindholm, who'd scored 3 goals all regular season, he scored. And then overtime, a litany of mistakes made by players. But yeah, Sheldon Keefe, you gone. The assistant coaches, all gone. It's going to be a whole new set.
Okay, quick. What happens faster? What happens faster? The Philadelphia 76ers are on the phone with Paul George's agent, or the Maple Leafs are on the phone with whoever represents Craig Berube?
Oh, they are. It's Craig Berube. They are rushing to do that, because at the very least, Paul George has had a lot of bad playoff moments and some injury issues as well. Jesus, that was a fun series as a Knicks fan. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Thursday night was great for me. I watched the Leafs win and the Knicks eliminate the 76ers. A good night.
I don't know where Craig Berube is right now, but here's what I imagine is happening at his front door. Candy Graham.
Yeah.
Candy Graham from MLSE.
Yeah. Now you want me to do Blazing Saddles. Candy Graham from Mongo. Candy Graham from Mongo.
That's actually a pretty good Cleavon Little. I wish people could see your face, because you've really got the tilt of his head just right. It's quite good. Okay, let's get into the spicy meatball here. All right. So we did the two that were almost obligatory because they're, you know, we're going from top down.
Yeah.
Number three, Mitch Marner.
How do you convince him, Mitch? There's going to be two things. Whatever your money you thought you were getting, you're not going to get it anymore. Or July 1st, you have time for an extension. They've got to move him. They've got to trade him. And I'm okay. Listen, if they do trade him, we know what's going to happen. There's going to be all the articles. They'll do the trade grades. And spoiler alert, the Leafs got a C-. I'm just going to tell you right now, they got a C-. Because they trade him, they're not going to get the top value for him. He only has 1 year left. So it's not like where he's going, the other team has control. The value is going to be down. I don't care. And it's nothing against him as a person. He's a good person. Sometimes you need, you know, subtraction through addition through subtraction. That's where I'm at with Mitch Marner. You got to move him. The numbers are damning.
I got to believe Brad Treliving thinks back to his time in Calgary and says, what should I do with this mercurial winger who may or may not want to be here and is worth a lot of money? Oh, he says he wants to stay and compete. Oh, he just left for Columbus. Oh, no. I'm sure they're thinking, as they should be. Again, props to Jonas Siegel in his article. He said something that we don't say enough, which is the idea of a core four has proven to be flawed, but we don't know if that's because of the top heavy salary or just the way it was allotted. Can you just not do it with four forwards? Could they have found a way to take the scalpel and cut Mitch Marner out of that and plug in some kind of top-line defenseman to help Morgan Riley out? A genuine number one, or at the very least, a genuine number two.
It's got to be a number one, because we'll get to Morgan Riley.
Yeah, I think so too. But when you look at like Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook on that Chicago team, and this was supposed to be the Chicago team of the future with all this incredible top-line talent, but there was nobody great on defense. There have been some good ones who have floated through, and I think at his best, Morgan Riley is
good,
quite good.
Moments of quite good.
At his best, you know, he was really good in last year's playoffs. But the idea of four players making over $40 million and all of them being top four forwards is just flawed. There's no way to make this work. And Mitch Marner is clearly the guy to go, and has been for a while, because he doesn't play well in the playoffs. It's not his game.
Let's just go the story of game seven losses since this group got together. And by the way, I'm going to include Columbus. That was a game five, but it was a best of five series.
Okay, let's say elimination games.
The final elimination game, right. Not game
the final boss.
Six. Yeah, but I mean, even if you did the elimination games of five and sixes, the numbers still aren't good. Mitch Marner, 2 assists in 6 games. That's what he's had. And he's had some games with good points in games 1 through 3 in a playoff series, but the series goes on, it gets worse.
It's funny because I don't have the stats in front of me, but Nylander has been so maligned by so many for so long. But in those games, he always seems to be there. He always seems to deliver. And people talk about his game-breaking talent. I don't know that Nylander suddenly becomes a playoff warrior. But he's also not skating around the perimeter of the ice looking for something fancy to do that's going to land him on SportsCenter. After the Montreal series, look, I get things wrong all the time, but after the Montreal series, I said, you got to get rid of this guy because he'll never learn how to play winning hockey. Not that he won't learn how to play great hockey or beautiful hockey, but he'll never learn how to play winning hockey. And the NHL is filled with guys like that. Maybe not at this talent level, but guys who are really good players and they contribute to stats, but not winning. And that's him. And the problem is now everybody knows it. And he's got 1 year left on his deal. So to go back to you, the C-minus grade feels almost inevitable. And we'll have to be happy with addition by subtraction.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Honestly, I am. And by the way, remember for years I get about Nylander being maligned. I'll always push back a little on it. The reason why people talked about Nylander being traded was, you know, at the time before it was a the contract wasn't as long, and because he was really good, and because you could get a number one defenseman for Nylander. That's a compliment. No one said we need to trade Nylander to get depth defenseman. It's we need an elite defenseman. How do you get one of those? You got to trade an elite player. That's how I always viewed it with Nylander. But no, he's certainly been better statistically than Marner in the playoffs.
So, Matt, the summer is a dead time, particularly when the Jays are bad, and you're going to be doing shows basically out of nothing. So I'm going to give you your summer MVP. And I don't like to bring families into stuff, but in this case, they've inserted themselves into the story, so it's fair game. But Paul Marner is going to be your summer MVP.
Oh, I've thought about it, Bob. I've thought about that.
He's going to be our... What was Lonzo Ball's dad name? What was his name again?
LeVar
Ball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, he is going to be hockey's LeVar Ball.
It's true. It's like, you know, at some point, I'm going to look at Twitter, and I'm going to see Twitter trending, and it's going to be like Hamas, the Gardner, Trump, Paul Marner, and then like Drake. You know, that'll be the things. And I'll be like, oh, shit.
It's going to be Paul Marner, 12 million, no move clause.
Yeah. It's coming. And on the front end, Marner's a good person. Marner does a lot. Yes. Yeah. Marner's a good person. He's done a lot of charity work. It's just not working. It's not working. And the problem also, Bob, is, as you mentioned, the only way it was going to work is if all four players were, and we've talked about this before, were both healthy and productive. Against Montreal, Tavares out. Some of the guys not productive. This year, hey, no Nylander for games 1 through 3. Matthews out for a little bit, maybe not 100%. And the other guys, Tavares, not productive. Marner, not productive. You require both things to happen at optimal levels at all times. And that's just not how playoff hockey works.
So when you think back to his initial contract negotiation, which was really unpopular, there was a lot of insinuation that he thought he deserved Austin Matthews money or something close to it.
Yep.
So this playoff series was tailor-made to justify that line of argumentation, because you had Willie out for the first 3 games and then Austin Matthews with health problems on the back end of the series and missing time. And even when he comes back in game 7, isn't really that guy. Well, if you're making $11 million, and okay, your second line center, John Tavares, he's aging. We'll get to that in a second. But Nylander spends half the time hurt, and your greatest player spends the other half of the time hurt. Like, seriously, that's a clear the lane. Give me a ball. I'm in an ISO situation. If you want the narrative to be that this guy is all world, you couldn't have set it up any better for him. And he spends, and here's what I kept thinking is, like, he is a great player, but maybe he's always going to be the Robin, because his job is to make great players even better. And that's not unfair. You can be an amazing player and just be there to elevate other talent. But maybe in the absence of those great goal scorers, he's not a goal scorer. He's there to help goal scorers. And maybe that just wasn't the moment for him the way we thought it was.
He didn't elevate anyone beyond one nice pass setting up a Matthew Nyes goal early in the series. He's an incredible regular season player, and the numbers in the playoffs, he's James Harden. He's James Harden.
Yeah,
the numbers go down so much. And it's not even just about points and goals. It's also about, did you feel his presence? Like were there extended stretches? Like, oh my God, Marner is dangling. Marner is dominating. He is making the Bruins look silly. I noticed Tavares more in this series. I noticed Matthew Nyes more in this series than I did Mitch Marner. And it's not like this is the only time. If the Leafs went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year and those guys were all stars, we view this differently. But this is the exact same thing we've seen every year. It looks the same. It looks exactly the same.
In game 6, when the storyline was Max Domi has really elevated his game, I thought to myself, that sounds great for the Leafs, but it's terrible for Mitch Marner. Because if we're not talking about him now, we're talking about Max freaking Domi, who's a quality NHL player, but he sure as hell not an 11 million build a franchise around this guy kind of player. If we're talking about Matthew Nyes and Max Domi and Tyler Bertuzzi looked feisty out there, but not Mitch Marner, if it takes you eight names to get to him, he's not pulling his weight. Mm-hmm. You know, this also speaks to something where hockey and basketball have this in common, baseball and football less so, which is just playoffs are different. The playoffs are different. Like every playoffs, everybody tries harder.
Yes.
But I don't think in football, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think in football the game is called wildly differently.
No, I think of the sports, playoff football looks a lot like regular season football.
Right. I mean, maybe in the fourth quarter, the whistle goes away a little bit, or the flag in this case goes away a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's also consistent with the regular season where you might give the last 8 minutes of a close game. You know, you maybe turn a blind eye to the occasional hold here and there if it's not egregious. But hockey just becomes different. They call it differently. And when you call it differently, the skill changes. Power plays become much more important. And guys like Marner just don't thrive. They just don't thrive. They can't thrive. The game is literally, like, you can take out a bat and smack someone across the back of the head with it in the hockey. You know, and that's why will can defeat skill in hockey in a way that's not true in the other sports.
In game 7, when the Leafs lost to Tampa in 2022, Nick Paul scored 2 goals. He's played in the league for a decade. Only once has he hit 20. In that same game, Nylander, no points. Tavares, no points. Matthews and Marner had just 1 assist each. Yeah.
Could you imagine in football if some random slot back won his team the Super Bowl and every round on the way up? That narrative never happens. I mean, someone might have an individual great game. Mm-hmm. But like, let's say you're like the wild card team going into a playoff. And you wind up winning the Super Bowl. Does anyone ever say that slot back carried this team?
Absolutely not. That slot back had a great half of one game, but it's right. The quarterback and it's the pass rusher and sometimes the great receiver.
Right. But as opposed to hockey, where at the end of this, you go, oh man, that guy's like every year there's somebody like, oh, he elevated from out of nowhere and he really carried this team on his back.
Yeah.
And so in a sport where that's not only possible, it's kind of designed to be like that. I think it's really weird, but like, it's almost like you have to think like there's 2 kinds of rosters and they built one that was perfect for the regular season.
It's great.
And just really bad for the playoffs.
2 points on that. One, as great as it is in the regular season, they've never won a division. Been together a long time. Never won a division.
Yeah, good point.
Two, think of the gap between if people do fantasy hockey at the regular season, where they draft Maple Leafs versus if they go in a playoff pool, where do they draft those same Maple Leafs? And the gap in that would be massive.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point. The drop-off is massive. And also, I think it's a great point about they've never won the division. Because think about this. The argumentation from Willie Nylander, we were in there, we were so close, it was just a bad break. That was kind of his wrap-up. And that's fair, and that's true. But here's the thing. You struggled to get out of the first round. Florida pummeled Tampa. Colorado looks unstoppable. Don't know what the Edmonton Oilers are yet, but they sure look good at times. There are just teams that look way better, but you have the best goal scorer on earth and your best players are entering their prime years. And if you're still struggling to get out of the first round, you're not an elite team. You're working hard to be a good team. And that's not where a rebuild should land you, in the middle. They started from the bottom. Now they're here. And where here is the middle. And they're struggling to get to the bottom of the top. It's not good enough. It didn't work.
Bob, perfect way to put it. We have We have 7 minutes and 40
seconds. Oh, that's
seconds.
It? Oh, son of a gun. Because we're on Zoom today. Okay, yes. Well, let me fly through some stuff. So,
I'll give quick answers. I'll give quick answers.
Tavares, do you eat cash to deal him?
Absolutely, 100%. If someone wants to take him, eat the cash. Don't give up a draft pick, eat the cash. But Tavares,
Okay, I'm not so sure about that because I think he still has some value and there's one more year. I'm actually going to say Tavares can stay, but you've got to be able to get someone to move him out of center and to the wing. Max Domi, is he back?
I'd bring him back. I would bring him back. I really like I like this game. I like the fact that game one, he realized I was way too hyped. I put out a hype video and started with me sitting on the lap of my pappy. I would, and again, the boring answer is within, a certain range, but I would have no problem bringing back Max Domi.
Bertuzzi?
A little less so.
Yeah,
if he comes back, great, but put it this way. Those have got to be contracts where everyone is saying, oh, wow, Those are team-friendly deals.
We've seen young players get hyped up in this market all the time, but Matthew Nyes really did look good. So where are you at on the Matthew Nyes arc?
I'm excited. I'm excited for him. He looked really comfortable last year in the playoffs. He looked the exact same thing this year. The physicality, the defense for a guy still that young. Yes, Matthew Nyes is a guy that I'm happy is going to be a Maple Leaf at a very good contract for the next little while.
This team desperately needed a Braden Point. And I'm not saying he's going to be as great as Braden Point, but someone who just comes out of your system and is good, which I think probably Dubas, when he came up with the top four plan, assumed that one of the people he drafted would eventually be on an entry-level contract and good. A little late, but Matthew Nyes might be that guy. Morgan Rielly, this is a tough one.
This is the easiest one, but he's impossible to trade. Yeah. You know what? You know what it is? You know who Morgan Rielly is?
No.
He's Kevin Spacey in The Usual Suspects. Hmm. Where we don't realize in the end it was him. Now, Bob, I've done, you know, a little bit of work here on it. If you go back and look at Morgan Rielly every year in the playoffs, like this year, 3 assists in 7 games. If you go look at all those game 7 losses, in 6 of those game 7 losses or game 5 against Columbus, he has 1 goal, 0 assists, and is a minus 8 in those 6 games. You're supposed to be the offensive defenseman. I'd move Morgan Rielly in a second. The Leafs have got a great record without him. I'm fine with it. I'm perfectly comfortable.
Okay, last name, and then I got a couple of rapid-fire questions for you. Auston Matthews. Not in a hockey way, because I think we know who he is, and he's real and spectacular. But behind the scenes, every great winner at some point has to be a bit of a killer when it comes to his own roster. And we've seen this a million times, whether it's Giannis or Danny Ainge back in the day, someone came to him and he said, oh God, I love Dennis Johnson. Now we got to trade him because we can get so-and-so and that guy's better. It doesn't matter if it's your best friend, you're there to win. If you're Auston Matthews, is your message to the team, break it up or we can do this because I love these guys?
Publicly, he's going to say, we love these guys. He said that yesterday, but he's going to, in the moment, all the emotions. But no, he's got to put on his full LeBron James and just take the scalpel out.
Okay, now, because we have a certain vision of winners being that kind of person, if he doesn't do that, does it diminish what you think of him?
A little bit, but then he goes full King Lear. The problem wasn't that he didn't love, it's that he loved unwisely.
That's a bit of a cop-out answer, but it's such a good one.
It's a total cop-out answer, but it sounds smart.
Okay, so if some of these big pieces get moved, I'm going to play my favorite talk radio game. Who would look good in a Leafs uniform? I'll start with one that's proved to be very unpopular, but I'm going to stand by it. Drew Doughty. Drew Doughty has 2 more years left on his deal at $11 million. He is... You know, I wanted to see how the rest of the league esteemed him because he plays on the West Coast. So you don't see him that much. Yeah. But, you know, in ESPN's player and execs polls, he was in the top 10 of NHL defensemen, even at his age, which I think is 34 or 35. But he's got 2 cup rings. He's a puck mover. He's right-handed. He's a grown-up. Everybody in this market knows him. And you get him for 2 more years, which realistically is the premium years of Matthews window. He allows Morgan Rielly to not have to carry that defense. He's the best partner he'll ever have had on the right side. And what are you getting rid of? You can say, oh, but you're getting rid of this incredibly talented winger with possible upside. If you believe that's true, just sign Marner and figure out something else to do. But we're not there with Marner. So in 2 years, when Marner is in getting 110 points in LA and they're out in the first round, are we going to care? Like, would we make that deal for 2 real kicks at the can? Getting exactly what we need. And I'm going to argue somebody that the fans would probably really like, because we're shipping out someone the fans don't really like. And if you're going to be charging that much for tickets, MLS, you should care about how much the fans like this team.
Bob, that's a great answer. It's almost like you've produced and been on radio for a living.
Everybody hated it.
Yeah.
Everybody hated it for different reasons. The Kings are getting ripped off. Well, the Leafs are getting ripped off. That's what tells me it's good.
Here's my final thought. If you want to do a pushback, the pushback is every year in the playoffs, Toronto's first round opponent, whether it's Boston or Tampa or whomever, is much more talented than like the Kings that Edmonton just had to beat, or Vancouver with Nashville. but it's time for a major change. I no longer fear it. And that's why I'm okay with any player, coach, or executive. They've had 7 years. It's not a small sample size anymore.
Are you prepared for them to take a step back if you think it's going to lead them to a step forward?
Yes, I'd be hypocritical not.
Yeah, so if you get Marner and you come back with some great young pieces, like say you make a deal with a Buffalo and you get Owen Power or something, like someone who feels like they could be a top player, but in the future, are you cool with that?
100%.
It kind of burns Matthews' window, though.
If the Maple Leafs had lost a playoff series where every game they're losing 6-5, I'd have a different opinion. But they lose every game 2-1. That's not enough.
Okay, well, I feel like that's all the postmortem I have today. That's 9 names for 9 series.
It was great, Bob. Good job by you. We got less than a minute, so I can't even find sort of that clever little vaulting off point that leads to the finish of our show. We will chat soon. Trade for Drew Doughty. See you later, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.